And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Call Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. It is great to be with you again today. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much for praying for us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling in. Really do appreciate that. I'm your host, E.W. Jackson, here on The Awakening, a program of American Family Radio. You can listen to us not only on radios around the country, but you can listen to us on AFR.net. We're live streaming every program. Every program is also archived. You can go to our website. And even when you've missed a program, you can go back and check it out. You can still listen to it, even if you can't listen to it live. The number here is 888-589-8840. I'm not going to take any calls right now. I've got a little bit of introductory work to do, but you can make a note of it. If you're new to the program or you don't have it anywhere near you, just write it down so when the time comes that you just can't hold back any longer, you've got to get in on the conversation. You can put it right in there, 888-589-8840. If you want to follow me on Facebook, I'm at E.W. Jackson SR. Remember, I'm banned on Twitter, but I'm in the process of getting my organizational Twitter feed up and running again, and my church Twitter feed is up and running again. I just got to start putting stuff in there. And, of course, you can check me out at our website, standamerica.us, standamerica.us. By the way, American Family Radio is American Family Association is hosting an event right here in Virginia. For those of you who are listening here in Virginia on Thursday night, I will be at a Fredericksburg Town Hall meeting with a couple of my AFA colleagues. Let's see, Abraham Hamilton III will be there. And let me make sure I'm getting this right now. Yes, and Walker Wildman will be there. And we'll be together with you in Fredericksburg Town Hall. So if you're listening in Virginia, 2801 Plank Road is where it's going to take place. I'd love to see you there. All of us would love to see you there. And I'll tell you about some other speaking engagements I have for those of you, because I'm going to be heading down to – I'm heading up to New Hampshire next week. And, in fact, I'll be in – oh, wow, that's right. I'll be in North Carolina on Saturday and Sunday. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. What's today, Tuesday? I'll tell you a little bit more about that as we get further into the week, okay? So that if you are listening in North Carolina and you want to come visit with me and get to meet me and give me a chance to shake your hand, I'd love to have you do that as well. Okay, today is a very special day, folks. I celebrate this day. In fact, my organization really wants to see September become American History Month, because September 17th is one of the most important days in human history. It is the day that the Constitutional Convention delegates ratified, passed the Constitution of the United States and sent it to the states for ratification. It's the day that Ben Franklin walked out of the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, was met by Mrs. Powell, who said, "Well, doctor, what have you given us, a monarchy or a republic?" And he gave that famous answer, "We've given you a republic if you can keep it." Well, folks, I am convinced that without the help and intervention of Almighty God and the continued diligence and vigilance of the American people, we're not going to keep it, because there are forces at work in our country that don't want us to keep it. I really believe this, folks, with all my heart. The Constitution of the United States, in fact, I don't just believe it, it's a fact. It's the truth. The Constitution of the United States is the most successful governing document in the history of mankind, bar none. Nothing else comes even close. It's been in existence for well over 200 years, not quite the same length as our country's existence, because we, of course, it was not ratified for 2 years after that. I think it went into effect, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was March of 1789, And in fact, it was New Hampshire that, and I'll be in New Hampshire next week, but it was New Hampshire that cast the deciding vote, the ratification that made the Constitution the law of the land. And I believe that was in March of 1789. So counting from there, we've been under the Constitution of the United States, with, of course, a number of amendments along the way. And then shortly thereafter, we passed the Bill of Rights. Folks, there's nothing like it. You know, I love this country. And it's and one of the reasons why I love this country is I really believe that our founding fathers were some of the most brilliant and inspired people that the world has ever seen. And you got people running around here. They're basically Marxists and socialists and communists who really don't like our constitutional system, mainly because they're filled with evil. And yeah, I said it because that's just the truth of the matter. These elites. Now, some people are just misguided. Some kids are just been they've just been miseducated and indoctrinated. But these elites are full of evil, and they really want power over everybody and control over everything. And they really, they know better. They ought to know better. But of course, they're so filled with the devil that they're blinded, blinded by hatred, blinded by the thirst for power. But the fact of the matter is that Constitution is something for us to celebrate. Our Declaration is something for us to celebrate. And it's one of the reasons why I love this country, because this is the only country in the world that's ever establish a government on the basis that rights and freedoms don't come from government, they come from God, that sovereignty doesn't belong to government, ultimately it belongs to the people under God, and that therefore the government's powers are limited to those things that do not encroach upon the freedom of the individual. Folks, there's never been a nation designed that way. Have we done it perfectly? Of course not, because we're not perfect people. But the design is absolutely brilliant and unprecedented. And anybody who's got an ounce of common sense has got to know that. But sadly, the left doesn't want to know that, doesn't want to acknowledge that. They want to dismiss the Constitution as an antiquated document passed by a bunch of racist white men who were slaveholders. Even though most of the founding fathers were not slaveholders and most of the founding fathers were opposed to slavery and they wanted to have an anti-slavery declaration in the Declaration of Independence and they wanted to have anti-slavery language in the Constitution. But in order to hold the Republic together, they had to put those questions off because there were some states that were just absolutely wedded to the system and they weren't willing to yield in any way. And in order to maintain unity for the purpose of defeating the British initially and then just getting the nation up and running and started, they postponed the inevitable confrontation that slavery would present. But it wasn't because they overwhelmingly thought it was a good thing. They didn't. They knew it was a problem. But then again, America didn't create it, folks. America inherited slavery. In fact, I was thinking about this a little bit earlier, and I want you all to hear me well. And I want, if you're Italian, you're Irish, you're Russian, you're Eastern European, you're Asian, whatever your background, hear me well. And you black folks, hear me well. You know, slavery is not unique to black people. Every person on the face of the earth, if you go far enough in their background, they will have ancestors who were slaves. Well, how do you know that? Because everybody at one point, if you weren't a king or a potentate or a feudal leader or someone who just had extraordinary wealth, everybody in one way or another were slaves. I mean, remember, the Romans enslaved much of the world. You know the famous movie, Spartacus? Well, what was Spartacus? He was a European, but he was a slave in the Roman Empire. And folks, it's been a universal occurrence. This idea, oh, black people have really been, we've been mistreated like no other people. That's a lot of hogwash. It's part of the human condition and experience. And we ought to find more reasons to come together than we find to tear ourselves apart. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Recently, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors passed a resolution that declares the National Rifle Association to be a domestic terrorist organization. I wasn't too surprised since I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area and often read about similar kinds of resolutions passed by the Berkeley City Council. But this resolution is worth a brief evaluation because it points to a dangerous trend. First, the supervisors attempt to redefine terms according to their leftist lexicon. Even people who strongly disagree with the NRA would have trouble calling it a domestic terrorist organization. Moreover, terrorism is not a viewpoint, it's a terrorist action. Jim Garrity put it this way, being a member of Occupy Wall Street does not make you a terrorist. Being a member of Occupy Wall Street and planning to blow up a bridge makes you a terrorist. Second, the supervisors order city employees to take every reasonable step to limit business interactions with the NRA and its supporters. Does that apply to someone who has a contract with a city who is on the membership roll of the NRA? Jim Garrity wonders if the city would cancel a contract with a company that provides orange traffic cones because someone in the company supported the NRA. Third, the supervisors also urge other cities to follow their example. If they're successful in getting other cities to join them, the NRA might have difficulty scheduling conventions, workshops, and even gun safety seminars in various cities. For those of you that hate the NRA and approve of these actions, let me ask you a question. How would you feel if a conservative city council or board of supervisors labeled the ACLU, CARE, or a number of other groups this way? I think that illustrates what is wrong with this rash decision by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Antisemitism, go to viewpoints.info/antisemitism. Viewpoints.info/antisemitism.
A Moment of Truth with Gary Bryden of the Association of Independent Methodists.
Jesus began his prayer in John 17:1 with, Father, the hour is come, glorify thy Son, that thy Son also may glorify thee. And again in verse 5, and now, O Father, and as Father in verses 11, 21, 24, and 25. In the garden he prayed, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. The role of the Father in the home is rooted in God's identification of himself as Father. Dr. Dennis Kinlaw put it this way, quote, We must remember that before God ever created a creature, he was a father. This is who he is in his essence from all eternity.
The Association of Independent Methodists, like-minded congregations doing together what can't be done separately. Visit AIM2020.com.
Fran Fisher here. We'll talk today with Judge Roy Moore, who knows a little bit about what Brett Kavanaugh is going through. And we'll examine the impeachment threat through a biblical lens and tell you what this is really all about. Representative Ilhan Omar insists that God is telling us to vote, which raises the question, which God is she talking about? Next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. Well, folks, since this is Constitution Day, we have a guest who is a constitutional expert. He is the Director of Legal Communications from the First Liberty Institute, Latham Watts. Latham, welcome to The Awakening. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, look, before I ask you some substantive questions about where we are in terms of our respect for the Constitution and its role in our country, tell us a little bit about First Liberty Institute.
Certainly, and thank you for the opportunity to do so. First Liberty Institute is a nonprofit law firm and think tank exclusively dedicated to restoring and protecting religious liberty for all Americans. So the only kind of case that we engage in is the kind that protects people of faith and their right to live according to their faith. So we have a very specific focus, and that's the only kind of case that we take. As a nonprofit, we're supported, we're a 501c3, we're supported by donors, and that allows us to never send a bill to our clients for the legal services that we provide. So we represent people all over the country, people of all faiths. Anyone practicing a faith consistent with the law and the Constitution, we will defend their right to do so, free of charge to them.
And if people want to access you, find you, where do they go on the web?
Certainly. It is firstliberty.org, all spelled out, firstliberty.org. And we actually, if they're interested in getting a free copy of the Constitution, since it is Constitution Day, if they go to firstliberty.org/Constitution, they can find out on that page how to get a free Constitution from us here at First Liberty.
All right. So, Latham, I'm a lover of the Constitution. I just believe it is a unique governing document. And, of course, the values that undergird it made it possible in the first place. I'm concerned about what the future of the Constitution is. So the first question I want to ask you is, what do you consider to be the future of the Constitution, and what are the forces that threaten it? Is it far-left politics that kind of don't see the First and Second Amendment, or any, frankly, for that matter, the Constitution itself as valid because it's racist or it's antiquated or whatever? Is it judges that don't really care about it? Or is it a culture in which the rule of law is just not that important anymore? People feel like they should be able to do whatever they want to do and not be limited, as in, for example, in immigration, not be limited to what the laws say because their personal sense of what is right and wrong is what ought to govern. I mean, what's the future look like for our Constitution?
Well, I would say yes. It's all of those things that you said. That would be the short answer. But it's kind of an interesting time in that we are seeing a lot of really good judges confirmed to the federal bench at all levels. Excuse me, from the district court level to the circuit courts of appeals and the Supreme Court. So, in one way, the people that are charged with applying the Constitution, I think we are actually seeing an improvement there because of the folks that have been nominated and confirmed. The flip side of that is, as you mentioned, I believe the culture is probably at best sliding the other direction. And there are some, as you suggested, who are probably doing their best to drive it in the wrong direction. We have some reason for hope with the types of judges that are being confirmed right now, but law and politics are always downstream of culture. And if you know the courtroom, the cases that we litigate, the courtroom really, when it comes to defending your rights, is the last line of defense. We have to do a better job of winning the culture. That said, if you think about what the Constitution, the reason it was written. As you said, the principle that it was founded on, the main one was that the only purpose of government is to protect the God-given rights of the people. So when they set out to write this document, they wrote a document expressly for the purpose of limiting the power of the federal government. And they knew that, when you entrusted government with enough power to protect a right, that same power could be used to trample that right. And that's why they put in place the system of checks and balances between the three separate co-equal branches of government. They knew human nature being what it is, that when someone is put in a position of power, they tend to want more of it or hold on to it. And they set that human nature against itself. And they expected that the three branches of government would zealously guard their own authority and therefore would be a check on the overexpansion of the authority of the other two. I think we have seen over time some branches of government can cede too much of their authority to one of the other two branches, and that can lead to a larger expansion of government and government intrusion into areas of private life where it was never intended. And that's why religious liberty and those types of cases that we do, that's why it's our sole focus. There's a reason that religious liberty was listed first in the First Amendment, because the founders knew if a government is allowed to invade the space between man and God, or man and his own conscience, there is literally no limit to what government can do. And so if you lose that, the rest of the rights protected in the Bill of Rights is just a matter of time. So I think that a solution is people have to take it upon themselves. You don't have to be a constitutional scholar or a lawyer, but the founders expected us to be the first guardians of our own liberty. You can't do that if you don't know what your rights are. So people have a responsibility to educate themselves. don't assume that your kids are going to be taught this in school. They're certainly not going to be taught it on a college campus. If they learn anything about the Constitution, it will be, as you mentioned, that some of the people who wrote it own slaves, and therefore you should discredit all of this. And frankly, you won't study it much in law school either. You'll study a bunch of Supreme Court cases.
Right.
But the actual document itself, you're not likely to get much of an education in that. But thankfully, there are lots of resources, as I mentioned before, on our website. There are ways to get a free copy of the Constitution and information about what's going on with our court system and the types of judges being confirmed and the threats to religious liberty. And folks can see all that at firstliberty.org or firstliberty.org/constitution.
Yeah, you certainly. And by the way, I'll make a confession. In a former life, I was a practicing attorney, and I graduated from Harvard Law School. And I, to people's shock, I told them there was not one time that we were ever asked to read the Constitution. We were told to read cases regarding the
right.
Constitution, not the Constitution itself. So I know exactly what you mean. Now, unlike you, I have been delivered from the practice of law.
I'm a recovering attorney myself. I've been in recovery for many, many years now. Thankfully, First Liberty has much better litigators than me. They don't need me to try cases. So my job is the communication side of what we do and explaining what we do to the general public and why it's important and why they should care about it. So I share your status as a recovering attorney.
And of course, you know, look, we say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek because we know that lawyers, just like First Liberty, when they are doing what they are charged to do in our system, are just some of the most important and valuable people with a set of skills that are absolutely necessary to help secure our freedom. So, I mean, you know, we say
That's
that
right.
somewhat jokingly, but a good lawyer is really your best friend. But look, let's talk about a couple of concepts that have found their way into our constitutional jurisprudence. Is the concept of the Constitution we've only got a couple minutes, we'll take a quick break, and I'll hold you over to the next segment if you can stay,
okay.
and then we'll finish our discussion. But the Constitution as a living document, is that a pernicious idea? Do we make too much of it,
Absolutely.
Or is it not that big a deal?
No, that is it's a dangerous idea, because a Constitution that means one thing yesterday and means something different today is meaningless tomorrow. That puts the onus on the protection of your rights at the behest of whoever is interpreting the Constitution that day. And if your rights are determined by whatever judge you happen to be standing in front of, that's a recipe for tyranny. Liberty is not in the eye of the beholder. As I said, you know, the founders believed, and they wrote the Constitution on the principle that the purpose of government is to protect God-given rights. That's where your rights come from. Your rights do not come from this Constitution. There are several of them that are listed there that we decided to give the government enough power to protect. But the source of your rights is not this document. This document was written to limit the authority of the government.
And an elected official, a governor, a president, who appoints judges who believe that the Constitution is a living document, then is really kind of one of the worst things that can happen for our judiciary, then, isn't it?
That's exactly right, because, as I said, it leads to rights being subject to the whims of an unelected judge who serves for life on the federal bench. And that is not what the founders intended. And it also leads to, you know, confusion in daily life as to what our rights are. The founders wrote this Constitution. I believe they said what they meant and meant what they said. And, a judge who believes in this living document theory, you know, Justice Scalia once said that a judge who is pleased with every outcome of every decision he grants is not a good judge. A living document guy never has to be disappointed. Constitution means whatever he wants it to mean.
We're going to take a quick break, folks. Our guest is Latham Watts. He's Director of Legal Communications for First Liberty Institute. We'll be back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Politics, the Christian's responsibility. You know, that's a subject that is certainly relevant, but one that has been ignored by many long and often. Because, you see, the Christian does have some political responsibility. To begin with, the Christian has a responsibility not to accept the common belief that politics is a crooked business without doing something to correct it. Too long we have accepted politics as being inherently evil. For years I have been informed that politics is a crooked business and that its crookedness was to be accepted. Politics does not have to be crooked. It is not crooked even by nature. Whatever is crooked about politics is so partly because we have allowed it. As Christians, we have a responsibility to make government as honest and fair and efficient as it can be. Not only that, but the Christian has a responsibility of recognizing elected officials as humans capable of making mistakes. No person is infallible. And simply because an official makes a mistake, or even more than one mistake, doesn't automatically make him a crooked politician. And remember that no person or groups of persons can solve everybody's problems. Still another responsibility of the Christian is to be involved in the political process. All that is necessary for the triumph of evil, wrote Edmund Burke, is that good men do nothing. In many elections, if not in most elections, less than 50% of the qualified voters even bother to vote. Too often we have divorced Christian commitment from social, political responsibility. Separation of church and state does not mean separation of Christian faith and civic responsibility. God so loved the world, not just the church, but the world. As Christians, it is our responsibility not to be concerned with what's best for me, but what is best for our city, our state, our nation. We have an obligation to support principles rather than prejudices. Many times we have criticized without contributing. I'm reminded of the man I visited once who told me everything that was wrong with the church. The only problem was that he had not been inside a church in 20 years. Sometimes we're that way with politics. In the past 2 years, how many of us have contributed $1 or 1 hour to a good cause or a good candidate? How many of us even bothered to vote in the last election? The church has been terribly slow to recognize the responsibility of individual Christians to be involved in the political process. If anything, the emphasis has been for the Christians to stay clear of the crooked world of politics. The Christian has a responsibility to use his Christian commitment for social good. How? Well, for one thing, by encouraging and supporting good candidates. In order to have better officials, we must have better candidates. I remember hearing a lecturer say once that a person's private moral life did not affect his ability to serve a public office. As I listened, I wanted to tell him that he was wrong, but I knew I could never convince him of the fact. However, we are beginning to see now quite clearly that personal moral standards do affect a person's ability to serve in public office. As Christians, we do have responsibilities in the area of politics. How well we fulfill those responsibilities will determine the type of government we will have, from the local precinct to the national level.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Well, folks, I've got a constitutional expert with me today on Constitution Day from an organization that defends the constitutional rights of Americans. He's the Director of Legal Communications for First Liberty Institute, Latham Watts. Latham, I want to get—oh, and by the way, folks, if you want to call and ask him a question— I'll try to give you an opportunity to do that in the time we have left. The number is 888-589-8840. One of my frustrations, Latham, and I want you to speak to this, is I am really chagrined at the level of ignorance that Americans have about the Constitution. And to me, emblematic of that is this notion that the Constitution at one point said that black people were three-fifths of a person. And I've said to people, they've learned that stuff in school, and it never said that. It never even approached that or approximated that. And in fact, if they really understood the history, they would know the three-fifths compromise was an attempt to protect black people from the influence of those who were pro-slavery, not the other way around. But talk a little bit about how we begin to educate Americans on exactly what the Constitution does say, its history, how it came up. I mean, for example, the Constitution is not a pro-slavery document. It's not. It doesn't say anything about race in it. So talk a little bit about helping educate people. How do we do that?
Certainly. Yes, if there's one thing that's worse than being ignorant of what's in the Constitution, it is knowing things that aren't
right.
in the Constitution.
Right, exactly.
And you're exactly right. I mean, the three-fifths compromise was an anti-slavery position designed to reduce the influence of the slave-holding states in the legislature based on population. So when it comes to educating ourselves and on the Constitution, I think education on any topic begins at home. And it's not a safe bet to assume, as I said before, that your children are going to be taught anything about this in school. I certainly am not a perfect parent by any stretch, but I take an active role in the education of my children, and I ask them about what they're learning in school, and I ask them to, especially when it comes to history, they know Daddy was a history major, so they know. I'm going to want to talk to them specifically about what are you learning in history. And, if they're being taught something that's just not accurate, I bring that up. And I let the school know. And, I do my best to correct things like that when I come across them. But so any type of education always begins in the home. And, the founders, Even the founders, one of the first acts of the early Congress, the Northwest Ordinance, when they were dealing with settling the Northwest Territories, they wrote in there, and I'm paraphrasing, that a moral people and morality being said, necessary to the happiness of the people, a system of public education shall be established. The founders' idea of the whole reason for education was to create citizens capable of living freely in a republic, living in ordered liberty in a civil society. That's the purpose of education. And we've gotten far afield of that concept today. So I would say all of us who have school-age children, and even if your kids are out of school, parenting never stops. And we have to, education always begins at home. And you have to look for the opportunities to discuss those types of things with your kids, with your friends, with your neighbors, churchgoers, whoever, and I think that's what that's something fairly simple that all of us can do.
And of course, part of that has got to be to somehow once again strengthen the notion that the rule of law is important, because if you undermine that, which I think in many ways is being undermined today, then the Constitution is really just the supreme law of the land. If you undermine the notion that we are all governed by the rule of law, then you can ignore that the same way you ignore anything else, or certainly kind of interpret it out of existence so it doesn't really matter having any impact on people's lives. I know you guys aren't in the culture business, but it must affect you that people just don't seem to have any respect for law these days. I think are you all based in California?
No, sir. Our headquarters is in the Dallas, Texas area, Plano, Texas.
Okay.
Specific.
Okay. Well, we
are a little bit in the culture business.
Okay.
We do have we call it the first in, First Liberty Institute Fellowship program that we put on for college-age kids in the fall every year. And we bring a group, they have to apply and be accepted, but we bring a group to D.C. and we put them through a week-long study of constitutional issues, specifically religious liberty, and kind of train them to go back to their schools and be advocates for their own freedom and the freedom of others, because we know that that is a part, that's a big part of shaping the culture. So that's part of kind of the think tank side of what we do. So we're engaged, you know, certainly in the courtroom, but also upstream of law and politics in the culture as well.
Well, look, we've got a caller, and we don't have much time left with you. So let me see if we can get one question in and get you to answer it. Marty from Georgia. Marty, welcome. Marty, you there?
Hello?
Yes, Marty, go right ahead.
This is Andy.
Sorry about that. That's my fault. Yes, I know. You're Andy. Go right ahead, Andy.
Okay. I didn't know you were talking to me for a second here. But I do. I appreciate you. I just want to let you know, man, I appreciate you putting out there that it's not America that where slavery started at, but it always seemed to be center of things here in America anyway, as far as something that, that caused the tension between whites and blacks. You know, just the bull of racial injustice and all that bull crap. But, I mean, it was bad. Don't get me wrong. It was wrong. But it didn't start here. And I appreciate that. But
all right. Well, thank you, Andy, for the call. Hey, I referred before you came on talking about the fact that, you know, people criticize America. I said, but slavery didn't start with America. Slavery has been a universal institution all over the world. And yet I think it's used as an instrument to convince people that they shouldn't respect America, to, in effect, really to delegitimize our country. And here again, to attack the Constitution and the basis upon which this nation was founded. And that's that cultural piece that really bothers me. To what extent do you see race playing a big role in undermining the vitality and respect for the Constitution?
Anything that seeks to drive a wedge between people is a recipe for disaster for a culture. There's far more that human beings of all different backgrounds hold in common than they have differently. And you just look at what the founders wrote when they said that all men are created equal, mm-hmm. you know, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's not only a statement of basic fundamental human rights. It's also a statement of basic human longing that is common amongst all people everywhere. People want to live and live freely and pursue a life that makes them happy according to whatever they believe in. That's why the work that we do at First Liberty, we will represent, as I said, anyone of any faith that is seeking to practice their faith, you know, in keeping with the law and the Constitution. We'll defend your right to do so. And even for people who are not religious, they should care about religious liberty, because religious liberty is essentially the right of conscience. It's the right to live your life according to what you believe. For people of faith, that's informed by their religion. For those who aren't faithful, it's informed by maybe how their parents raised them or whatever it is. You have the right to live accordingly. That's common amongst all people everywhere.
And, Latham, we're out of time. But look, thank you so much for the work that you do. Thanks for joining us. We'll remind people of how they can get in touch with you. Keep up the good work. God bless.
This is Focus on the Family Minute. Tracy and Daryl Strawberry's marriage was in serious trouble. She blamed him for all the troubles, and the Lord challenged her to look at herself.
And I surrendered everything. I didn't know what to do with the marriage. I didn't know what to do with the kids. I didn't know what to do with the money. But the Lord taught me what to do with him. And I showed up at her house, and she would go through the word with me. She would pray with me. But it was also practical steps. I had to get a job. I had to do what was right and work on my relationship with my children. Yeah. I learned to treat Daryl with respect, even with the way he was living. I became that wife that lived for the Lord. And he started to look at my behavior. I didn't try to change him. I let it go, literally.
Focusing on your relationship with God is key. More from Tracy at FamilyMinute.org.
AFR's own J.J. Jasper is a morning on-air personality, author, comedian, Christian, and family man. J.J.'s also a keynote speaker at banquets, men's ministry events, pregnancy center fundraisers, and more.
This is Penny Weaver from Decatur, Illinois. Last year, we had the privilege of J.J. Jasper as our speaker. We had our largest fundraising banquet ever.
Information on J.J.'s availability to speak at your event is at jjjasper.com. It was a bad move. Target invited men who say they feel like women into restrooms and changing areas designated for women. They probably guessed other retailers would follow their lead, but they were wrong. Others saw that bandwagon was headed in the wrong direction. We're not ready to sacrifice the safety of women and children for the sake of progressive bathroom policies. Invite Target to make a better move. Sign the Boycott Target Pledge at afa.net.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You've been hearing about our Holy Land tour coming up in March, March 12th through the 20th. Well, it's filling up. In fact, I expect us to be full in the next few weeks. So if you're interested in going with us, if this is your bucket list trip and maybe this is the year you'd like to go, just go to the website twholyland.com. TWHolyLand.com. You know, the great thing about our trip to the Holy Land is experiencing it with brothers and sisters from across the country, many of whom listen to American Family Radio and support American Family Association. So you're going to be with folks of like mind and like spirit. We're going to have a wonderful time visiting Israel. So for more information, go to the website TWHolyLand.com. That's TWHolyLand.com.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Folks, one thing you will get on this network and you will get from me is a biblical worldview. And so let me, we just had Andy make a comment about my comment with regard to slavery. And as a descendant of Africans who came to this country as slaves, and my great-grandparents were slaves, I think I can speak to this authentically. There are no people, folks, on the face of the earth whose ancestors have not been enslaved. There are no people. Let me say that there are no people from the Aborigines in South America to the Africans in living in tribal communities in Africa, to the Native Americans here in America, to the Asians in China or Korea or Vietnam. Anywhere on the globe you go, you will find that people were always beset by the willingness of the strong to subjugate the weak. And folks, here again, that has nothing to do with race. It has to do with the human condition, the fallenness of mankind. God gave Adam dominion over the face of the earth, but he did not give him the right to dominate other people. That was the perversion of that dominion mantle once mankind fell. And then it became a matter of not providing loving leadership, but providing command and dictatorial control over other human beings. And you see it playing out over and over and over and over again. It's not anything unique. What is unique is for a nation to found itself on the principle that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Slavery is not unique, but that principle of founding and establishing a nation is unique in all the earth and in all of human history. And you know, I think one of the reasons the left continues to stoke the race card and any other division they can find, you know, Islamophobia and homophobia and this, that, and the other, is because just, folks, and hear me well. Just like the slaveholding class. And remember, most people did not have slaves, folks. In the South during the antebellum period, most people didn't have slaves. It was the wealthy landowners who were able to manage their plantations through slave labor. They were the main slaveholders. In fact, West Virginia was founded in part, broke away from Virginia in part, because ordinary workers found they could not get meaningful work because slave labor took that opportunity away from them. So it wasn't ordinary people who were slaveholders. Now, there's no question that racial ideology arose to justify slave ownership and to keep poor whites and poor blacks apart. Now, folks, that's just a fact of history. Because Bacon's Rebellion, I think it was Nathan Bacon, if I'm not mistaken, but in about the 1640s, he had a rebellion because he was white, and he owned some property, and there were some other indentured servants who were black, and of course there obviously was at that point they were still indentured servants, and they got together. And after they put down that rebellion that combined blacks and whites demanding justice, because what was happening was the elites were using all of the resources to protect themselves and their property and leaving the people who had very little with nothing. So they were taxing people, but they weren't using the money fairly to protect everybody's property, only the property of the elites. So that's how Bacon saw it. And they combined, and after that, they came up with the slave codes and the racial ideology because they didn't ever want white and black people to think that they had enough in common that they could combine their forces to demand better treatment. And you know what? The left is still doing that today. They're still using the same tactic to keep people apart, to keep people from recognizing that there's more that unites us than divides us. But oh, no, no. So basically, the poor white child is the enemy of the poor black child because the poor white child is a beneficiary of white privilege and he's your oppressor. I mean, it's stupid. It's silly. But even worse than that, it's just downright evil. But look, nobody gets through this life without suffering. No people have moved throughout history without suffering. Everybody suffers. And the idea of the left, our suffering is worse than your suffering. No, 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 no. Our suffering is worse than your suffering. No, 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 wait a minute. Our suffering is worse than, I mean, that's what they've got people doing. And the fact of the matter is, we've all suffered in one way or another. We've all been through a whole variety of things. Look, folks, Italians and Irish, and I only mention them because, you know, of the large migrations of them into our country in the 18th and 19th centuries. But when they came here, they faced absolutely horrendous circumstances. Horrendous. And I mean, to simply say, well, yeah, but you know, they weren't slaves. Well, look, why don't we consider the common pain and suffering of our common humanity rather than trying to establish our superior suffering by degrees? You know, because that's what the left tries to do to us. And it's time to call a halt to that. It's time to pull the cover off that. It's based upon lies and false narratives and innuendo. I mean, the whole idea, for example, you know, the Three-Fifths Clause, which I mentioned a little earlier. And, you know, I've only got a few minutes, but if you all call, I'll try to get one or two calls in. But Three-Fifths Clause. I guarantee you, folks, and I haven't done a scientific poll, but I guarantee you 75-80% of the American people believe that the Three-Fifths Clause was a constitutional clause that said that black people were only three-fifths of a person. And it said no such thing. In fact, the three-fifths clause was anti-slavery. It was a compromise that was intended to limit the power of the slave-holding South. It was not intended to enshrine some sort of inferiority of black people, and yet that's the way it's been read and taught. And it's completely contrary to the historical facts and record. This is just ignorance gone to seed and producing a harvest of bitterness and anger and hatred based upon lies. And the idea that America's a racist country, America's a white supremacist country. Well, what about all of the quote-unquote white people who stood against slavery? And by the way, they were in the South as well as in the North who said it was inherently wrong. Now, leading up to the Civil War when things really got tense, the Southerners who were opposed to slavery had to get out for the most part because it just got that heated. It got that angry. You all know that there was a lot of violence breaking out around the country, particularly in Kansas, for example, which became sort of the hotbed. That became a rehearsal for the Civil War in Kansas and Missouri, but primarily in Kansas. But the violence, the attack by Preston Brooks on Charles Sumner, the violence was reaching a boiling point. Okay, prior to the Civil War. And Southerners who were opposed to slavery, they either had to keep their mouth shut or get out because you did not dare suggest that, you know, this became a North-South thing or you were on the side of the North. But there was anti-slavery sentiment all over the country. Well, what about that? Well, you know, they don't talk about that. They just act like the whole country had this major consensus that black people are inferior and, yes, let's keep them all as slaves. Well, if that were the case, there wouldn't have been a civil war. And that wasn't the case. That was never the case. It was a hotly debated issue from the very beginning. And you can go all the way back to the earliest times in our history. You will find pamphlets written by anti-slavery forces. The Quakers were one of the leading groups in opposing slavery. But Christians in general, before there was an official abolitionist movement, there were those who spoke out against it and said it's wrong. It's inherently wrong. We can't do it. Well, remember, the founding fathers, folks, wanted to end it. Most of them wanted to end it. But they couldn't because there were two or three states, depending upon the circumstance, who simply depended so much on it that they just weren't allowing that. And my beloved state of Virginia at one point took that position, but North Carolina, South Carolina took that position. Most of the states said, you know what, it's inconsistent with our values. Well, what about that? Well, if the country is so racist, why was anybody ever opposed to slavery? I mean, folks, these people are lying about America. And it's time that we told the truth. That's why I believe September ought to be American History Month, where we set the record straight. Well, look, that's going to do it for me. You know what? Read the Constitution this week, this month. Talk to your kids about it. Talk to your family about it. And just thank God that we have it. All right, that's going to do it for me. I've got to go. But remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.